The year 2021 has seen an unprecedented surge in energy prices in Europe, with the retail price of electricity almost tripling in Estonia within a year. Many are quick to blame the Green Deal and so-called Green Turn, criticizing renewables for a lack of consistency in energy production. Yet, the roots of the problem seem to stretch far beyond, with the proponents of renewable energy citing the failure to slow down climate change efficiently and the reluctance of the majority of the world to invest sufficiently in greener energy sources sooner as the main cause of the current crisis. As fuel prices continue to rise and the energy demand continues to grow after the initial slowdown at the start of the pandemic, Europe is becoming more and more reliant on access to Russian gas reserves, something Russia's adversaries have long warned about. And with Russia having been under EU and US sanctions since the annexation of Crimea in 2014 and the subsequent Ukrainian crises, it's hard to conceive of a resolution that would satisfy both parties and, most importantly, would not come at the cost of fair living conditions of the residents on both sides. Although outright denied by Russian President Putin, it is feared that Russia has been withholding gas supplies, providing almost 20% less gas to Europe in the period from January to August 2021 as compared to the same period in 2019. It is speculated that if Nord Stream 2 pipeline does not get greenlit by Germany, Russia might cut down its supply to the EU. And, according to the German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock, it cannot be given the green light in its current form because it did not meet the requirements of EU energy law. Additionally, Germany has been under pressure from U.S. officials not to allow the pipeline to operate since it is feared to be used as a political weapon in the long-lasting standoff between the EU and Russia. It is also worth mentioning that in the past few years during the Trump administration, the U.S. itself had been increasing the export of liquid natural gas to Europe, among other places, while simultaneously pressuring Germany to halt the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Now, with the Biden administration in control, the U.S. is pledging to reduce methane emissions and take measures to incentivize green energy strategies worldwide. Yet, the export of gas has continued. In this whirlpool of energy politics, where does Estonia stand? What paths of recovery are feasible, taking into consideration the reliance of local energy markets on those of the EU and its partnership, or lack thereof, with Russia and the U.S.? How can Estonia ensure its energy needs are met, if need be, at least partially, without relying on foreign supplies? Like many here in Europe, I personally am wondering if I can afford my next power bill. How did it get this way? Is it going to get better? This is the Tallinn University Podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Michael Kangur. He's an associate professor of sustainable development at the School of Natural Sciences and Health here at Tallinn University. Dr. Kangur is an avid participant in the alternative energy strategies discussion in Estonia, and we're happy to have his expertise here with us today. Okay, we're here with Dr. Michael Kangur. Thank you for joining us on the pod, Doctor.
Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, so first off, can you give our listeners a bit of background on how Estonia has produced energy historically?
In Estonia, the tradition to use electricity, actually it's about 120 years old tradition, but for industrial scale, it celebrated its anniversary, 100 years anniversary, 2 years ago, and it has been built up onto the oil shale since the beginning, basically. So there was, at the first, there was some steam engines which used the wood, but basically it was developed by the German engineers. It was needed as oil and gasoline for the army as well, but its main development was done 100 years ago for the electricity purposes. if I remember correctly. Yes. So basically, we have used throughout the history, we have used fossil fuel. We have very few hydropower stations on the rivers. Still now, we have some enormous number of dams on our rivers. I think it was more than 100 dams comparing the size of Estonia and the number of rivers we have. It's a very large number of dams, but we still have, which are not used, and they haven't been used for the production of electricity, but for the mills, and for the wood and grain mills. And they are still on the rivers and blocking the pathways of the fishes. So for the European Union, we need to tear down these dams, but I think that ecologically is needed. So we have few, still now one hydropower station near Tallinn is still in use, but its environmental impact is quite strong for the rivers fisheries. It's so there is a debate because it's also quite old, so it's under the protection of the as a historical value. So the questions are that okay, how much we need to keep the old stuff, what are harmful for the ecological systems, but we can say that in this topic, what we discussed today about electricity, that we have used mostly the oil shale.
Oil shale is pretty unique to Estonia. And I understand that Estonia has historically been a world leader in production of oil shale. Can you tell some of our international listeners what oil shale is?
Okay, oil shale is remains of some alga lived in some few millions years ago, a few hundred millions years ago. In shallow sea bay, and it contains it's like limestone, similar to limestone, but the organic material content is a little bit higher. It is unique in the world. There is quite a lot of reserves in oil shale. It is very well or widely available in United States, we know, in Central Asia, in China, but Estonia has been the leading country on using this for electricity and for production of electricity and for the oil, just because its content of the organic material is so low. For us, it is only source what we could use for production. Otherwise, we should use wood or peat, but their energy content is even lower. So mostly in the world, the people are using the coal or oil. So the oil shale itself is not the best source of the energy. But for Estonia, it has been the only their resource of energy. And that's why on the 70s, when there was an energy crisis in 79, there was a lot of studies also in the United States, we know, about possibilities to use the oil shale for the production of oil and electricity. But because of the so low content of organic material, this was stopped. And then the research studies about the oil shale has stopped as well. So in Estonia, we had the reserves of the oil shale, and we had also the scientific basis to study it, how to use, how much reserves we have, and so the geological studies background was also on there.
Okay.
So the second one who has studied the oil shale now is China.
Okay, yeah. So basically it's a lower output form of fossil fuels.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. So the reason you're here today is we've been witnessing a historic energy price surge in Europe. What are the main reasons behind this phenomenon?
The main reason behind this is that the use of or need for the electricity is always increasing. It's like part of our lifestyle, that electricity should be available. It's a part of the comfort life. What do you enjoy? It's like basic human right to have access to the electricity. And this has led us to the comfort society, or so that the electricity usage is increasing. Whatever developments have been there are that we have more energy-saving lights and then all technologies, but this haven't led us to the decrease on usage of the electricity. If the lights are becoming less energy demanding, this means that people are starting to use more lights instead of using the same amount of lights and using less of electricity. The Jevons principle is behind this, that just that the technology is becoming cheaper doesn't make the production cheaper or the usage cheaper. It's just we are starting to use more of this. That this is a kind of a phenomena behind this. And then from other side, European Union has taken the position trying to lead to become the leading union or leading continent for the green economy, which should lead us to the reusable energy resources. But it is very hard to replace the fossil fuel energy with reusable energy sources because the demand is so high. And also for the reusable energy sources like solar or wind energy, we still need the minerals, some natural resources, and it is not available. There is one geopolitical reason behind this is that China has used their power to take over the control over all this rare metal resources, what are needed for the reusable energy sources. And there are kind of rising fight for geopolitical fight on this. And also one reason we know that in Sweden, in Germany, the government has decided to close down their nuclear station in different reasons. One is safety. After the Fukushima incident, that Germany decided to close down quicker the nuclear power stations. It's they closed down on the January 1st of this year three quite big large nuclear power stations, but they haven't built as much new energy sources. So we have, like in Estonia also, we are moving towards this, that the production, the electricity from the oil shale is becoming more and more expensive because of the cost of the CO2 quotas. But we haven't, in Estonia, we haven't built a new wind power stations for a decade now or something like this in different reasons. So we haven't built up the replacement of the energy production all over the Europe, but the demand has risen. And that's why we are at the moment in the crisis. If the winter is colder, in this winter, it happens that Russia decided to play a little bit to its gas export and also its prices. So it's changed the energy availability in Europe, which rocketed the prices of the energy. In 1992, we had in Rio de Janeiro was a world congress about the environmental issues, the world summit, and there all the governments, there 180 governments decided that we are starting to fight against the climate change, we are starting to protect the biodiversity and the soils and so on. In 1997 in Kyoto, the governments decided that there will be this CO2 quota market, And it was possible to calculate that in 20 years, 20, 25 years, the price of the CO2 is so high that we need new sources of the energy. That it was a 25 years ahead warning that that the situation like this is coming. In Estonia, we know that in 2007, the Green Party invited a special session for the parliament that to discuss about the sustainability of energy production in Estonia, and all the rest of the parties just laughed out that it's too early, it's we continue. So there wasn't any discussions. The Green Party was just laughed out about the idea that we should discuss about the sustainability of electric production. It's a politician's fault. They haven't decided, they haven't done their job to build up or secure people with energy. It was political decision to join with these international treaties. We don't want to be the North Korea, who is basically the only one who has left out on these agreements. If we want to play on the world market, in industrial or whatever service market, we need to follow certain rules. And these rules are saying that we are trying to save the world a little bit. So we are starting to add prices for the pollutions. So then we need to make other decisions that, okay, what we are then, how we are replacing these previous actions or previous ways of life, how we are replacing them. But these political decisions are hard. They are not very popular, probably. And that's why the politicians hasn't made these decisions. And that's why general public is suffering now on the very high prices of energy.
Okay, well, on that line, many commentators have blamed the EU Green Deal as part of the surge of prices. Do you think this is true? And basically, how has this Green Deal affected Estonia?
It's a demagogic argument that the Green Deal has somehow affected. Basically, we haven't done anything yet for the Green Deal. It has been only the plans at the moment. We are on the planning stage at the moment. I would say that we are on this situation that we haven't started earlier enough with this Green Deal agreements or building up the new green possibilities for the energy production or all our all this circular economy or all this stuff that we have relied too long on such a wasteful use of natural resources. And then this is where now we are starting to pay the prices of using such ways and natural resources. There isn't free lunches in the nature. That if we are using natural resources like this, the price or the payday is coming eventually anyway in one day. And now it's coming.
Okay.
We had to start much earlier. And now the same politicians are using this argument just to show by finger to someone, to blame someone that this is their fault. We can't avoid at the moment anymore this moving towards a Green Deal or a circular economy. It is our chance. I agree with those politicians like our former president, Kersti Kaljulaid, who has in several speeches, I have been in discussions with her, I'm always agreeing her that we should look it as possibility. It's a much smarter way how to do the business, and we can take care the leading positions that we are showing to the rest of the world. What are the possibilities, what are the chances to do business without harming the environment? Eventually, all the nations need to move towards this. At the moment, the United States has its new Green Deal. European Union has Green Deal. Japan is looking their possibilities because they have more social issues or demographic issues related with the things. So the big markets for us are moving towards greener technologies. So if we want to keep these markets, we need to play according to their rules. And as it is a developing market, it is a chance to build up something totally new, to take the leading position on this. European Union missed out the last chance, the digitalization of the industry or digital technologies rise on the 90s. So now the big companies are everywhere else instead of European Union.
Okay.
Now, as I have understood, that this is something what the European politicians, the leading politicians, what they have learned or what message they have taken, lessons they have taken, that they don't want to miss out this the new opportunity.
Some of the criticism that comes from these changes is people arguing that other than the major actors you did mention, countries like, say, China and India have built into these agreements the possibility to increase CO2 production for years still to come. So what would you say for those critics who argue that there's no point in making changes personally if all actors aren't on board?
Yes, that's true. It is an issue, and then we need to deal with this. But if my backyard is messy, I can't go to tell the neighbor that please clean up your backyard also. So, and what we have enjoyed in Europe, in North America, is that we have enjoyed the cheap production in Asia. But the why it is cheap is because of the not following the same rules as we are following on the towards the nature, but also towards the people. That have we paid fair prices for the products? And now, if we agree that, okay, we need to pay full prices of our products, then this means that production from the China, from the India, from these cheap labor countries are starting to move back to our countries. That if we want to build up the green economy, we need to stop blocking on borders the import of products which are not following the same rules as we are building up for our own companies. So this means that the production in India and in China, if they want to keep their businesses, they need to start to follow the same rules. And here is the key point that if we are starting to build up the new technologies and if we are starting to protect the markets for that, this means that we can take the lead on these technologies as well. And I think that this is a very important point. But another point is also contained is that quite often, publicly, the politicians, people in economics, they are blaming that, look, these people in Africa and so on, that they are polluting the rivers and so on. For first, this is not very well addressed factor or understood that in Europe, in the United States, the plastic trash has been transported to Africa, to Indonesia, to Asia, where it is going to the seas. So this is our trash. This is not only their pollution. Also from the factories, that the factories which are producing the genes for us, that these factories are polluting these rivers. That okay. This is our ecological footprint also, not only their countries.
So and we've also, just been offshoring our ecological footprints into those markets. So, okay, I understand. Yeah.
Yes. And then also there are a lot of I would say that 80% of the people still dreaming about the lifestyle what we are enjoying here in Europe, in Northern America. So on that time when they are dreaming about this lifestyle, they are not polluting in such magnitude as we are here in Europe and North America. We are doing it, that the 80% of the, or 20% of the world population is causing 80% of the world usage. So the problem is among us, not so much on the other countries. That we, our responsibility is to change our lifestyle. Okay. Not to ask immediately that they need to change as well. Yes, they need to change as well, but we need to take the lead from here.
Okay, well, that leads us into our next topic. You've mentioned already some aspects of international politics and diplomacy around energy. One of the big buzzwords in this topic lately has been energy security. Can you tell us what energy security means and what it means for Estonia specifically?
Energy security is that all the people are, that there is access to the electricity. That this is a basic human right, that you have right to get access to the electricity. And also it is for the country itself that we can't rely only on the electricity production from, or importing the electricity from other countries. So for Estonia in 90s, when we reestablished our independence, it was extremely important that we had the oil shale industry. And it was on such edge because the people who are working in oil shale industry are mainly, dominantly from the Russian-speaking minority. So they were oriented to the Soviet Union, and it was quite tricky that we got independence. We with those people who worked in or still working in on the oil shale industry, they somehow secured our independence on this we had our own electricity. I still remember I was a teenager on that time when we had the crisis on the petrol. There wasn't enough fuel for the cars and so on, but at least we had the electricity at home. So having your own energy resources is part of the being independent, that we don't depend on other countries. So now the question is how we are getting this. In same time, as we have our own oil shale power stations, their cooling system is depending on the Narva water body's water level, which is controlled by the Russian side. So there is a dam on the Narva River, which controls the Narva water body's water level. And this is a part of the cooling system of the power stations. And so the Russian could use this as a weapon to lower the water level in our cooling system, and so, then automatically the power stations have to shut down, that they don't have enough water. Russia has never used this weapon. Russia has never played with electricity, because for them it is also important that we are part of the big grid, because then it is easier to control or regulate the frequency of the electricity. This is very important. That if we have bigger grid, then it is much more easier to control the frequency. And this is a part of the deal. Russia has never used electricity as they have used the gas, the import of the gas to the Europe. They have used this weapon, but they have never used electricity, and they have never used for Estonia this influencing our electricity system. And basically, we don't have also strong agreement written on the papers. It has been made quite loose agreement between the people that, okay, we don't use this weapon, or probably it's not just the interest of the Russian top politicians to use this power, but this should be the lesson for us, or we shouldn't take it as a granted that they never use it. For me, the electricity security of the energy or energy security should rely on the production of electricity from many smaller resources. So basically we could have small power stations in every village. At the moment we see that how the people are starting to build more. In this last year, they have built a lot of solar power stations, but it's quite small percentage still what we can cover, because living in such a high north, it's electricity will be available only in summertime, or basically from November to February. They don't produce much electricity. We have the windmills. Like I said, they haven't built any new wind power stations for 10 years, but there are plans to build into the sea, the new ones. But we could produce more electricity from the combi stations, from the villages still using a lot of central heating systems. So producing the heat for the apartments, this could be connected with the production of the electricity, what can be sold into the grid, but what can be used also, that if there are some accidents happening, for example, in our power stations, whatever can happen, or there are big storms sometimes, so the grid is down and so on, so that providing the secure power, secure energy for the heating and then for the electricity locally, this could be one of the way how we should think about the future electricity production. That
diversification would increase Estonia's energy security?
Yes.
Well, I know we don't have you for much more time, but how do you think Estonia can cope with the international instability that has been created by political tensions between the EU/USA and Russia? Well, you mentioned that volatility in the relationship with Russia is one of the potential energy security threats. How can Estonia cope with this situation?
I see at the moment that there are controversial movements. In one hand, Estonia has always been one of the warners or saying in European Union that we can't trust Russia, we can't negotiate because they don't follow the same logic or rational arguments as the Western Europeans tend to use, so that the Russia can use energy weapon irrational ways, that they can lose more than Europe is losing, but just they don't use the same logic as we tend to do. But in the same time, I'm a little bit worried about the tendency or the trend at the moment, or the decision what has been made, that we are disconnecting from the Russian grid and should be connected with European grid, but we don't have plenty of connections at the moment with European grid, and the European grid is much smaller than the Russian grid is, and so I'm little bit worried. I'm sounding controversial. In one hand, I would say that we should get as independent from Russia as possible, but in the same time, I would say that Russia has never used electricity as a weapon. Controlling of the frequency is very important for our industries, for our life. So here it would be one of the possibilities maybe where we could start to build up some kind of negotiations, that maybe it's smarter to connect the grids of the Russian and European grids, so that to control together the frequency, because it is quite expensive, it is quite hard, and as the grid is bigger, the control of the frequencies is much more easier, and this is something what the both are interested, and it can't be used so easily as a weapon, because if Russia starts to play with frequency somehow, it influences its own businesses for first hand, and not so much the Europeans. So maybe this is one position where we could start to build up more normal relationships also with Russia. That this is one kind of positive example where the both sides are could be interested about something. We can't trust what they are thinking.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I mean, electricity production is only part of energy security, of course, and Russia hasn't been shy about using gas to influence.
Yes, exactly. But at the moment, we can see that they started to play with the gas in this fall, and Europe was flexible to find new sources for the gas. It's coming from the United States at the moment, the liquidized gas. Of course, it's the price is much higher, but this is something what Europe is now ready to accept, that, okay, the price is higher, but building the Nord Stream tube, Nord Stream second tube for importing the gas from the Russia, that it makes us dependent on the Russia. One interesting topic actually is that how we know that Russia has gas, because there are some indications that maybe Russia doesn't have such a gas reserves like he's blaming what they have, and they have the capacity to build up new production lines to produce gas as they are climbing, because they are not ready. They are not. They can't build up these new gas production systems by themselves. They don't have this capacity anymore. But in the same time, they don't have access to the Western investments anymore. So the question is that do they start to make deal with China, who has this capacity? Mm-hmm. But actually, the China geopolitically is bigger threat for the Russia, and then they know that this is a bigger threat for the Russia than the European Union. None of the European countries is not interested about anything, any piece of land of Russia. No one is not interested, but the China is, because they need the land for the production, for the food production, and so on. And so Russia is losing quite soon most of the Siberia, because it is taken over by the Chinese people. So Zari is a bigger threat. And the Russian top politicians doesn't act always rationally. They have different logic, what we think. So this is bigger danger.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in that answer there, but we're going to stick to energy security for the moment. According to recent polls, 57% of the Estonian population fully or partially support the building of a new generation of nuclear power plants. For many, however, of course, the memory of the consequences of nuclear power malfunction are still fresh, and the plans are seen as a potential threat. What are your thoughts on this? There has been debates about the possibility of building nuclear power plants in Estonia. What are some of the pros and cons that should be considered? Like, is nuclear power really green?
On the last elections, European Parliament elections, I was the only candidate who raised the question that, okay, maybe we should start to talk about nuclear power station. And then quite many of the politicians and who are now talking that we should build very quickly the new power stations, and they yelled me out that, no, you look what happened in Chernobyl and so on. I agree with this that we should discuss about this, because there are some interest to build it, and so we can't just hide it out that, okay, no, we don't talk about this. Yes, we need to talk about this, that do we need it, and can we afford it? I would say that, yes, we need some kind of energy resource, but I'm not convinced that we can afford it, because the building of the nuclear power station requires that we are building up also the security system for that. And the building up the security system is that we are starting to educate specialists who can work on this system. Hmm. Even if we are importing all the technology and then the nuclear power station is controlled by some foreign company who is providing all the knowledge to there, we still, as an independent country, we need to know what's happening in this power station. This means that we need this specialist. This means that we need to start to educate this specialist. And at the moment, we know what is the funding system or funding level of our universities is that do we have this money to educate such a people who, what is, it's quite expensive. Most probably we couldn't, maybe it's not very, so rational to build up for firsthand this curriculum in Estonia itself. May probably be cheaper to send the people out there. Yeah. But we know that the salaries of these people are quite high because it is quite demanding positions. So can we, how many of them?
Will they come back? Yeah.
Do they come back? And then they are starting to be work in some governmental office who has access and control over what's happening, or they because of the security reasons, they need to know what's happening there. So their salaries can't be very cheap. So this means that we are adding something to our governmental bills. But this is coming from the bills what we are paying every month for the electricity. Otherwise, it can't happen that those who are using the electricity, those must cover also the cost of the electricity. We don't have any magic source of money to cover these bills. That the cost of this control system must come from the price of the electricity. So even if the developers of those who are planning now or talking about the developing the new nuclear power station, they are so showing the price of the kilowatt or megawatt hour on the gate of the power station, but they don't talk about what are the additional costs, what as we as a society must cover, and from where these costs are coming. One thing is that that such kind of power stations, they're operating, let's say, 50 years. During the production of the electricity, on that time, they are producing also the waste, nuclear waste. Mm-hmm. And after the demolition of the power stations, there is also remaining quite a lot of, quite big amount of the nuclear waste.
Yeah.
Is it, they're showing that it's quite small amounts, that it's by the volume, it is not very big, but still it is nuclear waste. Even if it's the size of the Coca-Cola plastic bottle or yeah. It's size of the refrigerator, it doesn't matter. It is nuclear waste. This means, and then the waste remains active for, let's say, 10,000 to 100,000 years. This means that we need to build up system, control system, what remains to control the how the waste of the nuclear, how this nuclear waste has been stored.
You were talking about the storage problems for nuclear waste. Could you continue?
Yes, we need to store the nuclear waste for after the power station has demolished. We need to store this nuclear waste for at least 10,000 years to 100,000 years. This waste, it must be managed. So there has to be people who are working on securing it, controlling it, and so on. So to cover these costs of this nuclear waste storage and securing it, these costs must be covered money what is collected during the time when the power station is operating.
Yeah.
So this, during these 50 years, we need to collect money which lasts till 10,000 years.
Yeah, this brings up one of the main problems of energy transition, and that's getting public buy-in, like getting the public to go alongside the costs that are associated with transition. How important is that, and is it possible?
We don't know exactly what the technology is, so that for the public to explain what does it mean, it is... for the politician, it is very easy to say that we need a nuclear power station, but the term nuclear power station can mean so many different things. Mm-hmm. So to explain it for the honestly and then publicly to tell what does it mean, what are the additional costs, how long we need to cover such a cost and so on. So it's a so big and complex issue. To negotiate for the politicians, they don't like such hard topics, and I think that's why it is very demanded that the both sides, both the who are opposing to the nuclear power and so those who are pro the nuclear power, that they are talking as honestly and as openly as possible. Because this is a very big risk, what we are taking in both sides. If we are saying no to the nuclear power, then we need to say, okay, where we are getting this electricity, what we demand. And if we are saying yes to the nuclear power station, we need to consider all the consequences coming with this. So it requires open public discussions. It may take several years to discuss, to get all this understanding. And I think that this is where we are very, very weak, because what we see on developments like this, that people who are developing these technologies, they are people of the technologies. They are not people of the people. So we don't have the culture or tradition to include on such a discussions also the people from the humanities and social sciences.
Okay.
To not to convince, not to manipulate people to become agreed with a nuclear power station, for example, but rather to get into some kind of common agreement that this is what we are planning to do. We can see in so many cases in Estonia that there are plans to develop something, but they are forgetting that you can't force people to accept the technologies, or if they don't understand it, it is very hard for them to accept it. So we need more social sciences and humanities behind on these discussions, and we need to learn how to speak honestly and publicly about these things.
Yeah, I guess that applies to all the energy transitions that are going on now.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I know we're almost out of time here. So what do you see as the energy future of Europe, and how does Estonia fit into that?
I hope that we are developing towards this, that we have multiple sources, that the diversification on the energy production is one key. And another key is that we need to learn to use less electricity. It doesn't mean so dramatic change in the lifestyle as it may sound, but it requires smarter way how we are using the electricity.
Okay.
That controlling the electricity, that we are using electricity on that time when it is cheaper, when there is less users on behind this, and then for first we are stopping to waste electricity. Wasting of energy is a big deal also.
So, will my power bill be going down anytime soon?
I hope not.
Will the cost for me of my electricity be going down anytime soon?
The cost in longer run, no. In longer run, at the moment, I see that the electricity, the price of the energy is continuing to rise. that the global demand on the energy is rising, and then we don't have any good solutions for that, that the prices could go down. The only way is start to use less energy, start to use smarter equipment or the things that use less electricity. This is the only way how to get the price tag lower.
How can governments adjust to this new reality, knowing that people are struggling with paying the bills?
We can't leave anyone behind, but we need also consider that we shouldn't cover the costs of the people who are wasting energy. I mean that if the people has, for example, outdoor pool and heating it up in the winter time, then this is not a part of the human rights that we should cover such a cost. But the people who are really struggling, whose income is low, who doesn't have choices, living on an apartment and still struggling to pay the bill, definitely we need to, as a society, we need to help those people. But we shouldn't cover the bills of wasting of resources.
Well, Dr. Conger, thank you so much. I mean, there's a million more aspects of this issue we could get into.
Maybe, definitely.
Maybe we can have you back at another time.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Okay.
Okay.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Social Entrepreneurship Master's Program of Tallinn University. Are you a developer or entrepreneur who wishes to have a larger social impact? Or perhaps you're a professional of the social or health sector who wants to create more sustainable services? If so, then the Tallinn University's Master's Program of Social Entrepreneurship is for you. This program is a progressive educational initiative of Tallinn University with the aim of promoting entrepreneurship and innovation of the social and health sector, environmental protection, urban development, rural development, and community development. The program provides you with flexible opportunity to develop your own ideas using the innovative and business-friendly infrastructure of Estonia and being supported by the experts here at Tallinn University. To find out more, you can check out www.tlu.ee/social entrepreneurship. Well, thank you for listening again to the Tallinn University podcast. As usual, we are brought to you by the Tallinn University School of Governance, Law, and Society and the Baltic Film, Media, and Arts School of Tallinn University. Our producer is Avo Ulvik. Our research coordinator is Vega Samolue. And we've had additional contributions by Annie Ruta Inamdar, Jana Levitna, Kano Yusui, Catherine Helen Kasavadnik, Temitope Aluko. Thanks to them. Our theme song is Ghost of 68, written by myself and Paul Simmons. And any additional music is composed and performed by myself for Avo Ulvik. You can find us on Twitter at Tallinn Podcast and Facebook and Instagram at TLU Podcast. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.